right, here we are. Now it's much better. There we go. Nikita, welcome to the podcast for the first time. I feel like you and I have been chatting back and forth. It seems like a couple of years at this point, a year and a half at least, through different courses and different things we've done. So welcome to the podcast, man.
Well, thanks for having me, Z. It's my honor, and it's my first time being on a podcast ever.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I've had quite a few people that I invited for the first time, so I'm glad you're here.
Cool.
Dude, you have a pretty amazing story about going from, you know, oh man, so much of the legal stuff and going from one country to another and building products now and all this other stuff. Can you give me a little bit of background and for everyone that's listening? I mean, you're building all sorts of cool, like AI type products right now and all that. So give us a little bit of background on your history. Living, you're in Russia right now, right?
Yeah. And I was a diplomat for 6.5 years. And I ended up being a diplomat after not being very intentional during my college years. And like many people, I found myself in the final year not knowing what's next.
Okay.
And then it turned out that the only viable and money-wise path was to be a diplomat, at least for some time. But I always knew that I just need to make enough money to be able to start my business. And that's what I did. And it took 6.5 years, so way longer than I expected. But I got there and I was, well, my first 3 years were kind of nightmare in Moscow. Really hated my job. Just a lot of red tape and paperwork. And then I spent 3.5 years in Houston, where I had much more fun. Met a lot of people. I was a visa officer. And as a visa officer, I met tons of people, practiced my English a lot, and got to know the country very well. And that allowed me to start a business in the United States as soon as I quit my job there. I returned to Russia for financial reasons, mostly because I wanted to start a business. I knew it might take time and I would make mistakes, which 100% happened. So I wanted to be somewhere where I could live on the cheap.
Nice. Just a question for you really quickly. Can you explain for people that don't really understand what does it mean when you're a diplomat? What does that entail on your life? What does that do for what you can do, what you can't do, what does it mean to be a diplomat?
Yeah, it can mean a lot of things actually, because being in the Foreign Service, there are multiple roles that you can be in. So mostly that means that you have a ton of restrictions. Like you can't start a business on the side. You can only be paid by your one and only employer. When you're abroad posted, then you can only travel where you are allowed to travel. Like for example, when I was in Houston, there was a 25-mile zone that I wasn't allowed to leave without 72-hour notice. And I couldn't travel around the U.S. that easily. I was able to, but it wasn't easy. But you also get a ton of perks. Like the government pays for your apartment, for your car. You don't get taxed like at all. And there are also like minor perks that you meet people that you wouldn't otherwise meet. And for me, it meant meeting people who needed a visa in my case, and that I wouldn't ever be able to meet otherwise. People from with business backgrounds, especially what I valued most when I was there, because I knew I wanted to start a business, and I was actively looking for contacts and friends in that area. And that's what I did. I was able to find people who still serve as mentors and friends to this day.
Nice. And what did you go to school for? What was your role in school? What did you study?
International relations. And this is, this is how you become a diplomat. So it started with my infatuation with history, in high school. And then I got into college and, continued on that path. Just transformed into international relations. And that meant also a lot of language training. So I spent 4 years studying Dari, which is Afghan. Also studied Persian, Arabic, Spanish, and Polish. But at this point, I only use English. I've gotten everything
else. Oh, yeah. Those are not easy languages to take on. That's crazy. That's insane.
They're not. In the case of Dari, nobody asked me if I wanted to learn those. They just gave it to me because the government paid for my tuition.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. So what is your day-to-day as like a diplomat look like when it comes to just your day-to-day like work that you did or anything like that? Give me like a day or something that you can remember that you were doing. I'd love to know like a little bit of an example.
Yeah. So in Houston, that was very typical office job. Not very different from what most Americans would experience. And so I got into the office that I had to work on visa applications for an hour or so. Then I get a ton of emails with people asking how to get visas or specific questions about their documents. Then a lady from the visa center, who is our contractor that handles all the applications, comes in, and then I work through all those applications, and we then start working with them with my team. So I was head of the visa department, and I had at various points from one to three people working with me as my assistants. And that depended mostly on the time of year, because most people go to Russia in the summer, and that's all you do is visas. But in winter, you just get like a few applications a day, and that's it. So that was a lot of paperwork, a lot of bureaucracy, but I was fortunate to also occasionally get people who would personally come in to the consulate to hand in their documents, and then I would talk to them. And of course, I had to occasionally call people, ask them questions about their travels to Russia. And that's how I got to know a few people as well, and also got some travel opportunities because of that. And apart from visas, I would do like regular bureaucratic office paperwork, like internally relevant, but totally irrelevant in the grand scheme of things, because that paperwork just doesn't move any needle. It doesn't help anyone. And that was one reason I hated that job.
Yeah. Yeah. And so tell me about when you went back to Russia, about starting your first business, and why you why you went back, for whatever it is, financial reasons, family, doesn't matter. And what kind of kicked you off? What was the kind of starting point to starting that first business? And what was that business, if you can give me a little bit on that?
Yeah, that business was Brick, which is my planning app for solopreneurs. It helps you visualize your projects instead of having a bunch of to-dos that are overwhelming and hard to execute on. And I started because I scratched my own itch. I wanted to start a business back in fall 2020. And instead of, you know, planning a business, I started a planning app. I made like all the mistakes. I took like months to write a detailed business plan that I would later just toss because it was complete garbage. And my decision to come to Russia was because I had a 6 month old baby. Well, he was 1 year old by that time. And he had never seen his grandmas and grandpas because of the pandemic at that point. So we needed help, me and my wife. We lived with him for a year without any help from grannies or nannies. And the second reason was that it's way cheaper than pretty much anywhere else that you can live in the West. And that was reasons enough for us to be here. It made sense. And I was glad that I quit in May 2021, because after February 2022, that would be much harder, because quitting right now is often a problem for people, not just politically, but organizationally as well. Well, it's a lot of difficulty, but for me, it was a good decision, and I knew I wanted to start a business being in Russia, but a business should not be in Russia. I started the business in the United States. I incorporated in Texas. And one reason for that was that I didn't want the Russian government to reach my business in any shape or form. And that was a great decision, because after the war started, I was able to keep the business running despite a lot of issues. But if I were here, I would probably not be able to get paid for what I do.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, because crazy. The banking system is completely cut off.
Wow. That's insane. And how do you you have everything in the US, like bank accounts and everything is in the US. How do you transfer money to yourself? Or like, do you just use like the card from here over there? How does that work in terms of that whole system?
Yeah, I have both personal and business bank accounts in the US. And I have absolutely no way to transfer that money to Russia. It doesn't work anymore. Wow. You can't do that. So I'm still living off of my savings mostly, because my business are not that profitable at the moment. And even if they were profitable, I wouldn't be able to touch that money all that much, because what I make in the US, I cannot spend in Russia, because those the credit cards from outside Russia don't work in Russia, and the Russian credit cards don't work elsewhere, and there's no way to wire money between Russia and anywhere else pretty much. So there's a lot of complexity.
That's crazy.
My only hope is that one day I just get out of here and get to use it.
Yeah. Is it your goal ultimately is to get out of, at some point, leave Russia and come live in the US or somewhere else?
Yes. It's stressful to live here. There are a lot of, there's difficulty everywhere politically, especially if you're not a big fan of the war. There are a lot of business complexities that I just talked about. But there's still a lot to love here that most people outside don't even know about. Like, there are innovative businesses here. There are a lot of business opportunities here as well, even though I don't use them all that much. There are very educated people here that are world-class in what they do. There's food that you will not find anywhere else. And there is nature that you will not find anywhere else. And there are cities, especially big ones, that are world-class in a lot of the things that you come to expect from the West, but not Russia, like top level restaurants that you've never heard about in America, but and like theaters, all those things about culture, those will be missed.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. And tell me how it is now with running. I know you started also another like little side business called Indie Plans.
Right.
What does that look like for you? So you have a co-founder with Brick, from what I understand when we last talked, and now you're doing Indie Plans by yourself. So amongst those two things, and you also started, when did you start more like writing online and kind of doing that side of things, like to really start marketing your products? Is that something that you were always trying to do, or is it something that you kicked off more recently, like in 2020 or whenever you started Brick?
So for online writing, I only started in November 2022. And before that, I had a blog, which I started in 2021. And that was a newsletter called The Bricklayer. And that was my take on productivity. And that fizzled out pathetically because, first, I couldn't find an audience for that. And secondly, I made all the rookie mistakes, like writing about a topic that I was temporarily interested in, but that wasn't long-term aligned with what I want to do. And for some reason, it took me 51 issues to realize that something wasn't working. And I had like 48 subscribers after 51 issues. And it took me 18 months to realize that this wasn't really working. So I quit. And it had taken a lot of my time. Like at first, when I started, I could easily spend like 20 hours writing a single newsletter issue. It was long and boring and not something that I myself would read right now. But that taught me about what actually matters in writing. And I understood that I picked a heavy lift right away. And that was a big mistake. So then I started on Twitter in November 2022. And on Twitter as well, I made all the mistakes, and the journey has been very slow. And right now I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn. I started being active on LinkedIn just a couple weeks ago. Finally have enough content ideas in me to keep it consistent, more or less, and make the most of it with the lessons that I learned in the past year that I've been writing online. As for your indie plans question, I actually have four businesses going on right now. Indie plans is the latest. So it works. We still use the company that I use for Brick, the one incorporated in Texas. But since I'm the only founder here, we just use a profit sharing agreement there so that I get the full share of what I make from Indie Plans. And my other business is a prompt writing business called promptnik.com. But that one, it mostly doesn't use the Brick infrastructure because it's a freelance business and I can get paid to my personal bank account bypassing Brick, because people are fine working with you as a freelancer and using your personal bank account. Yeah, and that's how I make it work. And hopefully, Brick will still serve as my infrastructure for the businesses that I have in mind and already working on.
Very nice, very nice. And what when you started working with some of the AI stuff, because I know you're doing a lot of the prompting and the indie plans and everything like that, what kind of triggered you into stepping into AI and that whole thing? Like, what was it about that you were like, hey, I really need to? Because I mean, you basically spun off two businesses. You know, I know you integrated AI into like Brick as well to kind of speed that up a little bit, make it more efficient. But what was it about like that moment when you found how effective AI can be that you're just like, I need to double down on this? Did you have a certain spark in that moment?
Yeah, I started dabbling right after ChatGPT came out, and I liked it because it gave me ideas that would never cross my mind otherwise. That was fun, and I took a few courses to level up, and I used AI to help with my personal productivity mostly, and business ideation a lot. But then the real trigger for making AI my theme, if you will, was after I realized that I can replace people with it. I was making a lot of mistakes at the time, and I was like, for my newsletter, I was paying an editor because I thought, okay, I'm not a native speaker. I need an editor. So my writing actually sounds English. So I have a startup. Then I need a designer, like illustrations, UI, and like Twitter banners and whatnot. I need a designer for that. And then I paid all those people. And then I realized, wait a minute, I can just write a good prompt and I no longer need an editor. And if I write an even better prompt, I can even replace a designer in some situations. Like, for example, I have Brick only has a dark theme. And then at some point I realized that was a mistake because most people prefer the light one. But we started with a dark one for some reason. But then I realized I didn't want to pay another $500 to a designer to fix that. So I just went to ChatGPT, said that, well, you are a designer now. Here's what the app is all about. Here are the colors that we use and what we use those for. Now you suggest new colors for the light theme. And it did, and it sucked. And then we worked more, and suddenly it stopped sucking. it became good. And now we have an actually fun light theme ready to go that looks fine. And I got in like 2 or 3 hours chatting with ChatGPT and spending exactly zero. And then I realized that I helped people with their prompts for a while, but it never crossed my mind that this could be a business as well. So in November, I put up a quick landing page for PromptNik and started offering services for prompt writing. And by now I got 2 clients, and that helped me pay the bills with something that I've done for a long time, but didn't realize this could be a business.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. There's so much power in the whole prompt engineering side of things nowadays, especially because if you know what you're talking about and you know how to explain things and know what you're trying to get out of it, it's really, really powerful to be able to use AI on that front. And I've been tapping into it a little bit more, and I'll share with you some stuff off the podcast, what I'm kind of dabbling with in the background. But yeah, it's really, really awesome. And there's just so much that can be tapped into, whether it's like writing ideas, business ideas, whatever that might be. Let me ask you really quickly, what have you learned through this kind of journey of writing on Twitter and LinkedIn? And you said it's been pretty slow for you, like the growth and things like that. What were those kind of key moments where you just realized like what you kind of had to stick to and what you had to do in order to continue keeping going? Cause it can be very, it could be very like energy, like sucking when you just don't get anywhere, your stuff's not getting out there. You're not getting, especially if you're trying to run a business and market your business. And there's just so many different things that pull you in so many different directions. What's been kind of that point where you're like, I just need to kind of stick to this, be consistent, continue to like do what I'm doing? Cause I noticed that you've been putting out a lot more like videos and different things like that. So what was that moment where you just felt like, hey, I just need to kind of keep going with this?
Well, for some reason, I'm just naturally very good at keeping going, and that's not a good thing a lot of the time, because as you remember from my newsletter fiasco, I stuck to it for way longer than I should have. So here as well, I started writing on Twitter in November 2022, and it went pretty well at first. Like for a beginner. But then it slowed down, especially after the change of leadership on Twitter. And I not only because of that, because of my own mistakes as well. But anyway, I was good at staying consistent. I would just tweet once a day or twice a day. And I could do that reliably just because I have that discipline in me. But beyond that, discipline is not enough. You need like quality. You need to have direction, and that's something I lacked a lot. And this the time that I've been on Twitter, I think I've changed my direction like 4 or 5 times, like complete change of direction. So first I wrote about productivity, then I just switched to writing about whatever I was building. And now I mostly condensed that to AI plus no code plus building businesses with those skills. So how I came to that was pretty not straightforward. So AI finally gave me an opportunity to build apps on my own, because I'm not a coder and I hate being dependent on coders. I was unhappy with my co-founder for a long time because he was not fast enough. But here I can suddenly build whole apps with no code, with AI, which you can coax to do whatever you want just with natural language. And if you combine that with no code tools and automations like Make.com and Zapier and Bubble, then you can suddenly be a self-sufficient maker without depending on anyone. And so I read about that. I see people who, like me, are not fond of, are not enthusiastic about learning to code because it's really difficult. I tried that. I abandoned that. And I don't enjoy that. And I don't want to do that. And there are a lot of people like me, but they still want to build apps. And they don't realize that now is a very good time to do that, because with AI, you can talk in natural language that you already know. You don't have to learn anything. And prompt engineering is way easier than coding. And secondly, if you're not an idiot, you can build anything with automation tools. You don't have to be a genius to do that. And I'm not a genius by any means, but I built a few tools with just those skills, and I'm just getting started. And I think that by showing people that they have this power now, and most people don't realize they do, especially when they're not coders, it's very liberating. And I love that when I can show people that they can do so much now with just a little effort and focus.
It's a game changer, absolutely, and I see that as well. Like yesterday, I had an idea about like a little app thing that I wanted to build, and literally went to ChatGPT. I wrote out a whole I come from a project management background, so I can like layer out things pretty cleanly. Like, hey, this is what it needs to do. This is what I need. Blah blah blah. And I was like, and I want to build this in Bubble. And it gave me literally a step-by-step process on how to build it. So like, you still need a little bit of that background in terms of how you need to know what data types are. You need to know some of the knickknacks, but that stuff, you can still ask it, like explain what data types are. What should I, so you can still dig in, keep digging in. And I think that's really where it, where people, I think, either fall off because they're like, I don't want to go that deep because it doesn't interest me. But then when you get into it and you realize, like, once you do it once or twice or three times, it just like kind of clicks in your head and you're just like, oh shit. Because I always had this thing. If I was with my ideas and if I had the developer brain, I wanted to sit down and do one thing, I could have literally made bazillion apps by now. But I just never really enjoyed the development piece of things. Like, that just wasn't me. Right. To me, it's like, I have the idea, I have the use case, I know what to do with it. Somebody else should like build this type of thing. So yeah, it's pretty fascinating. Where do you see kind of AI over the next few years? Like when you work within it so much now and you're using it all the time, what's your kind of prediction of where that's all going at the moment? Or do you have anything where you're just like, hey, like this is getting crazy. Like, I don't even know where it's going.
Yeah, I have trouble keeping up. I use AI all the time, and it's very hard to keep up. Like, with all the tools that I don't want to try because there are too many of them. And the model's getting better faster than I can keep track. And that makes me fearful. Because if I can't keep up, then it gets overwhelming. But I think I'm learning to ignore a lot of the noise by now, and like I don't check all the tools that you can find in 10 daily threads about the 50 AI tools that you got to try right now. And my thoughts about the future of AI and today. I don't like to think about what's next. I understand that probably at some point AI will not need prompt engineers because it will write itself. It will be smarter than I am. It will guess what I need right away, and it will just do, create, conjure up anything that you can think of in moments. But I'm happy we're not there yet. And it's the moment where AI shines together with a person that wields it. Because right now, you cannot make AI do wonders for you. You have to add your own spark. Like, for example, if we take a practical example, Indie Plans that I just launched less than a month ago. But before that, I just needed a business plan. That's all. And I remembered my failure in 2020, writing a business plan for two months, and then it was useless in the end. So I went online and browsed available AI business plan generators, and they all sucked big time because they attempted to build a business plan on just a few pretty irrelevant pieces of information about you, like your business name. Like, what if my business name is Airbnb? How do you guess what I do? What if it's Perplexity? What does Perplexity do? How do you know? So if you want to build a good business plan generator, in my case, you have to know what actually matters in a business plan. And AI will not tell you that. It will. You can ask it, but it will give you a lot of good answers, but a lot of bad answers as well. And if you don't know the first thing about business, then you will probably mix it all up together and get a mediocre result. So in my situation, I had just enough experience and just enough books, highlights from my Kindle to make it work. I knew what was important in business plans, and I'm pretty confident I built the best business plan generator on the internet because it's completely personalized. It does the job way better than anything else out there. I just need to learn to market it. And when I think about AI, I understand that whatever your space, you cannot make AI do the job for you. It has to, you have to understand what's important, and you need to give direction. If you don't know the direction, don't understand what you want and what's important in your business, AI will not help you. And outstanding results come right now from a combination of a person who knows a thing or two about his space and ability to wield AI very well. And I'm happy for that because not a lot of people can do that very well. And in the future, I'm pretty confident AI will handle all that on its own, but it's not here. And I don't want to speculate when it will happen, but I'm confident it will. But I want to just make the most of the opportunity that I have right now.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah, I definitely think it's more like working with you than a for you type of thing. It does right. Some of the for you work on the back end, but it's mostly on the, you have to kind of, like you said, the prompt engineering and everything. What's kind of the next step here? Are you more, how are you dividing up your time between some of these businesses? Is it all working kind of cohesively together in one way or another, or do you feel like you've had to like take time away from like Brick to put it into this and different things? Because I know we only all have a finite amount of time and bandwidth and all this other stuff, and you have a family and all this. So how do you balance that side of things?
Yeah, when I mentioned that, I realized at some point last year that I can build things on my own. I was a bit over ecstatic and started building things at incredible pace, and I ended up with 7 products made in 1 year, and I realized that wasn't sustainable. So 2 of them didn't get traction, so I killed them easily. But another one was pretty promising, but I understood that it was probably going to be a little heavier lift than I would prefer at the moment. That was a Parity Camp. I took the website offline already, but in short, it was an idea to build parity deals for the App Store. Basically, parity pricing for App Store apps. And this niche is completely empty and potentially very profitable. But I couldn't make time, so I just killed it. And right now, I'm focusing on making the 4 businesses that I have left work. And the way I see it is that Indie Plans, which writes business plans, works very well with Brick. Brick is made for solopreneurs to help. It helps them plan things. And Brick can promote Indie Plans, and Indie Plans can promote Brick because they are very much adjacent to one another. Promptnik, which is my freelance business, it puts foot on the table, and it's not that hard to manage because there's no tech infrastructure apart from the website, which is just a one pager. It takes a lot of marketing effort, sure, but still, I can handle that. And my 4th business is something I'm trying to, it's not live yet. We're working on it in stealth mode for now. It's a medical thing. So the point here is that it was accidental. I'm partnering up with a coder and a dentist who specializes in oral medicine and oral ulcers specifically. And we're building an app for food diaries. It's a food diary, and it has a ton of AI in it. My thinking here is that when you're part of the big indie hacker community on Twitter, it's a very common mistake that you start building for indie hackers. And so Brick is for solopreneurs, which by extension are often indie hackers. Business plans, I also target mostly bootstrap teams, which are partly indie hackers as well. And Promptnik is an AI thing, which is pretty often targeted at indie hackers as well. And I don't want to be constrained by this niche, and it's not nearly the only one worth pursuing. And so this opportunity came in, and it was a great combination of a breath of fresh air, a different niche, combined with my strength in AI, because I can build great food diary analysis AIs that will blow anything that's on the market just out of the water, because it doesn't exist. Like, there are food diary apps that like have AI in it, but what it does is like it generates text and summaries for you. And what are those for? Our app will do actually useful things, like the most important one being finding connection between people's symptoms and foods they eat, which is a huge problem for a lot of people, like people with oral ulcers, oncology, rheumatology, a lot of conditions require you to have a food diary, and there might be a connection between specific food and symptoms. And that's just fascinating to me, that I can do something that can help people live better lives, not just plan better. It's just another level for me. And I want to try that. I will not quit that. So as for time management, yes, it's getting really hard. Right now I killed everything I could. I'm focusing on marketing. I'm trying to outsource everything I can to my wife and to an assistant that I have. And this year is the year of marketing for me 100%, because this is something I naturally suck at. And that was the missing piece for Brick and the ventures that I launched in 2023. And I'm not having that anymore. I need to get serious about this. And that's one reason I bought Justin Walsh's Creator MBA course just recently. And it's been, like with any course, you have to be at just the right stage for it to be useful to you. And this just hit the spot for me. I got like the exact marketing tools that I needed to finally start making some decent money, and hopefully this succeeds and I can still make those four businesses work while still enjoying building new tools. But I just make those new tools serve the existing ones. So for example, for indie plans, I'm building a free MVP planner where you basically just tell me what you want to build and who your target audience is and what resources you have. Like I have $200 and one person who's not a coder. Okay, we'll just give you an MVP. Like all the details, what to build, what not to build for free. And that'll be a lead magnet for indie plans. And then, for example, for PromptNIC, I want to build a prompt crafter, an AI that you just tell it, I want my AI to do this and that. I'm like, okay, here's your prompt. Because learning prompt engineering takes a long time. You probably don't want to do it, especially if you're, for example, if you're a marketer, your job is marketing, not prompt writing. And it takes... writing prompts takes a long time, and learning that takes even more time, and you don't want that. So here's a tool for you that will fall nicely into the PromptNIC space. And then it can serve as a lead magnet, even if paid, for my larger personalized prompts for AI apps service, which PromptNIC is right now. So I still satisfy my inner desire to build. I just channel it more correctly than I used to so that it serves a marketing purpose for the tools that I already have so that I stay focused.
Nice. So you're keeping everything basically in kind of one funnel at that point.
Yeah, that's the idea. Well, remains to be seen if it actually works, but that's that's how I imagine.
Well, it's all a work in progress, so that's all that really matters. But no, that's awesome, man. I'm really, really happy to hear that. What so what tools, let me ask you kind of a probably one of the last questions I'll get out here. What tools are you primarily using right now? Are you using primarily ChatGPT? Are you using like Webflow? Are you using Framer? Like, what are some of the tools that you can share that, you know, somebody may be interested in from, you know, a lot of the people probably listening to the podcast, or some of them, I should say, are probably not developers and people that are going to go out and build custom stuff. Like, what do you use at the moment that helps you kind of move a little bit faster?
Mm-hmm. So I use ChatGPT. I occasionally use Claude by Anthropic, but I really find it much less smart, and just it just doesn't hit the mark most of the time for me. But I find myself working with the vanilla ChatGPT less and less, and instead making GPTs. Because those are a little bit more flexible, and most of them are private. But at some point, if I decide to make them public, then I just make them public and use them as lead magnets or just help people for free. And I already have like 5 or 6 GPTs that are public. But there's a major limitation with ChatGPT is that with GPTs, I'm sorry, is that for some reason it only allows prompts that are no longer than 8,000 characters, and I increasingly find myself writing extremely long prompts, because if you want really good quality, then 8,000 characters will not do a lot of the time. So, for example, for indie plans, The key prompt that I use that actually writes the business plan is like 3 times longer than 8,000 characters. But fortunately, I use Assistance API from OpenAI, which you don't have to know code for as well to use if you use it with Make.com. So in Make.com, you can stitch together various tools, including Assistance API, that people don't use that much if they're not coders because they're scared by the API name. But if you use Make.com, you don't have to know the first thing about coding. You can just use it. And there's no limitation on how long your prompt is. At least I haven't hit it as yet. So use Make.com for indie plans. Like, indie plans is just a huge 26-step make.com automation that stitches together a few AI tools to get market research, then to write the prompt, to check the prompt, to criticize the prompt, and then make the prompt better with various inputs. And then I use Framer a lot. Framer is a huge revelation for me. I just started using it in October. And I've already built 5 landing pages with it. Never start from scratch. Use templates and indie plans. I built a landing page in just 2 days without being a designer and not knowing the first thing about how to build landing pages as a developer. And I use it for all kinds of unexpected things. Like, I made screenshots for Brick's App Store listing with Framer, just because designing stunning graphics, landing pages, anything with Framer is so easy, that I don't need like anything else to do things that require design. Well, I'm not talking about logos or illustrations, of course. Those things are just a different space. And One of the tools that I use is Zapier, but I use it less and less, really. I found Make.com better for tools. But Zapier just released tables and interfaces. And interfaces, you can build whole apps. I haven't tried that. I tried tables, and I now have all my content that I publish. As it publishes to Twitter or LinkedIn, it goes there from Typefully. So that I automatically build a database of my content there. But interfaces should be much more powerful. Haven't tried it, but it can replace Bubble in a lot of cases, as far as I can tell. It just has, it's less flexible, less designy, but it's a first step. And I started using Bubble just recently to build a lead magnet free tool, the MVP planner that I mentioned for indie plans. But then I found myself doing a lot of marketing, and my wife kind of took over. She's the one building that tool in Bubble right now. She's way ahead of me, and I expect that I will not be diving into Bubble all that much. I'll just outsource it to her because she's so much better at this point. And she has built that tool like 80% already. And I'll just won't dabble with it just to stay focused on what I can do better and let her do her thing instead.
Nice. I love that. I love that. That's awesome, man. That's awesome. That's a good set of tools. And I think that there's a lot of value in being able to stitch things together and kind of, you know, duct tape certain things together that actually work for the long term, and you don't have to go out and build anything like custom or anything like that. So,
yeah.
This is awesome. I appreciate you sharing all of that about yourself and about your journey and what you've been doing. And is there anything else you want to mention before we kind of wrap up here? Maybe let people know where to follow you or anything like that. I'll also have it in the show notes, but feel free to let people know where to find your products, your social media, and anything else.
Sure. Thank you. You can find me on Twitter and LinkedIn. I started on LinkedIn just recently, and I started making videos there and on Twitter as well. And my plan for now is just to keep showing people like myself who can't code, who are not designers, who don't know much about app creation or business in general, that they can build whole tools, whole apps right now with what they have on the shoestring without being experts in pretty much anything. You just need a good idea, and you need the right tools, and you need to stay simple and focused. And I intend to show exactly how. And if you want that, I'll make it super clear and very, very accessible for you. So welcome.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. Nikita, it was great chatting with you, and we will definitely keep in touch. I wish you the best of luck with all your ventures. I love seeing everything you're building. I love rooting for you and seeing all the stuff you keep putting out, and you just keep taking shots. And I think the first time you and I chatted, I remember telling you just like, you know, you gotta keep doing that. And I think you've been sticking with your plan. So major props to you, man. And I hope you continue to crush it. And as always, if you ever need anything, you let me know, and I'm happy to help.
Thank you, Zlatko. Appreciate the opportunity, and I'll do the same for you.
Cheers. Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye.